Welcome. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is Ross Douglas, who lives above Willits and near the Wildlife Preserve. Welcome, Ross.
Thank you, Will.
First of all, talk to me about your relationship with water.
I'm an acupuncturist by trade, and my Taoist signature from my birth is the water dragon. And it really has embodied my personality, so to speak. I understand that water is such a calming, nurturing thing. It nurtures without even understanding that it is nourishing things, makes the plants grow, and helps the earth be whole. And I see it as a primary element of our existence. And that's why it's so important in this time that we see here with the natives at Standing Rock.
Yes, it has the power to slice through mountains.
Yes, it has that power also. That is its more yang nature, I guess you would call it. But it's basically a yin element, and it is to nurture and surround and bind things together, much the way we see in a spiritual way that compassion surrounds and binds things together.
And we're mostly water.
Yes, a high percentage of water.
So you've been to Standing Rock. Tell me about that and what's happening there.
Well, for me, it was a very enriching experience. I went to Standing Rock with a lady who runs the Ute Foundation down in Aspen, and another lady who oversees the museum, the Ute Museum in Montrose. We went up over what is now Indigenous Peoples Day, sometimes called Columbus Day, and we went up to see what was happening in Standing Rock. And I must say that it was a completely nourishing experience. I highly recommend that people, if they have the time, to actually go and see Standing Rock. What you'll find is something that has elements of a 1800s Indian camp, and it has elements of a spiritual revival. I highly recommend the ceremony that is done at the beginning of each day. It is a completely awe-inspiring tradition that these people are carrying on day after day. Of course, there are many other ceremonies going on almost on a continuous basis. About 8 o'clock in the morning, the women go down to the river and perform a water ceremony, which is a very beautiful. It's short, but it's very beautiful to see and participate with.
And how do you understand this dynamic between the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Lakota people at Standing Rock?
Well, it has a lot of different facets. When I first got there, the people that I met with, they were Minneconju, and I was staying in the Oglala camp, and they described to me that in the Battle of the Little Bighorn, when Custer attacked the Sioux grouping there, he first attacked the Hung Papa Sioux, which is the tribe of Standing Rock. And during that battle, the Oglalas came to their aid. So they're very much seeing it as almost a historical reenactment of that engagement. Of course, there are a lot of other things going on there as well. But it was very, very interesting to see the 200 or 300 tribes and their flags that are there representing the different indigenous people from really around the world. And it was nice to see our own nation's flag, the Cherokee, there among the others.
And you're of Cherokee lineage.
Yes, my father and my grandfather and myself, all subscribe to those philosophical beliefs.
And how does your worldview see this contest that's being played out?
I see it very similar to other contests between weak and strong in the past history. And for the most part, things that really make a change involve peace. And when you are in Standing Rock, there is a real effort to teach the people that violence must be resisted with peace. And so most of the time, if you see photographs, you'll basically be seeing militarized people more or less attacking people who are either seated or standing in prayer. And that is thought of as the methodology to deal with this particular spasm of violence in our humanity.
It sounds a lot like Gandhi and what the, happened with the British in India.
Yes, with the salt marches and that kind of thing. It reminds me very much of the salt march to the sea in India, or some of the other things that have come down to us in history, where peaceful, more or less resistance has been able to show a violent adversary a better way to go. It's a cooperation.
I've been told cooperation is the key for survival in a calamity.
I believe that's so. I have a daughter who's now in college, but as she was growing and going to school, the school always wanted to have competition between people. And I'd always tried to speak to her about cooperation and it being a more of a feminine kind of way of proceeding in life. And I've found, even though I'm a man and love competition, I've found that cooperation a lot of times yields a higher or better result.
As my competitiveness has mellowed out, I'm really having more fun learning what can happen in cooperation.
Yes.
And what did you witness with your daughter when you gave her that permission?
I think it helped her succeed, more or less. I mean, she wasn't always at the top or the first in the ski race, but she learned to acquire things that she needed to succeed and join with other people and get their best benefits and efforts to make wholeness and make the whole situation succeed.
I know some people see this standoff at Standing Rock to be the fundamental contest of our time that's playing out right now.
Yes, it could be, but I do feel that we will get through this. I know that there are lots of incidents with several of the pipelines around the country, whether it be in Canada. They're trying to move the tar sands oil to the west, and we're bringing probably tar sands oil down through the Keystone XL pipeline, and it is an issue that we'll have to work through as human beings, that's for sure. I'm not sure how this particular pipeline incident will play out, but I know that the people feel as if they are being the scapegoats. They are being thrown under the bus, much the same as the people in Flint, Michigan were poisoned with lead in the water. And they're seeing that a lot of times poor and disenfranchised people do not have a voice. And I think the gathering of the tribes up there are to give the people voice. And I've been heartened to see people like Al Gore stand up and say that this is something that we need to focus and pay attention on, and maybe we can get it resolved amicably. I've also been heartened to see people like Robert Kennedy Jr. move forward and go up to Standing Rock and identify that this pipeline company has not gone through the normal EPA channels to get a environmental impact study done. And this is something that needs to be brought out and discussed in the public forum. And hopefully we can resolve this situation peacefully.
Yeah, when you mentioned that to me earlier, I did some research, and there are actually three federal agencies who said to the Army Corps of Engineers, this is not an adequate environmental impact statement. And my understanding, if it's not correct, tell me, they basically just took on the industry's assessment that there was no problem.
Yes, that's true. I think a real problem was that the legal advice from the pipeline company had them parse the different their small little areas where they've put pipeline in and not made it continuous. And if you applied for a permit with a 1,700-mile pipeline, you would have to do an environmental impact study. But their lawyers have cut the pipeline up in little parcels, and then they can submit a short form, which doesn't require the full environmental impact study. Now, I'm sure that the people in the United States have decided when you build a giant project like this, it needs to be analyzed. And so this is something that I think can be dealt with in the short term. Of course, there are other larger long-term issues that will still have to be resolved, but I think that this is one that the American people, white or red, should be looking at.
And leaking pipelines are an everyday concern. I saw in the paper today there's a pipeline that's been leaking into a spring and a stock pond north of Parachute since this summer.
Yes. No, it's becoming more and more of a problem, because when we build things, they are not perfect. And there's always problems. And now that we have several thousand pipelines crisscrossing the country, we're having more and more problems. And it makes good economic sense to run a pipeline as long as you can without doing a major renovation. So we are more prone to leaks when we maintain our attitude like that.
This is William Evans. You're listening to Shifting Gears. I'm talking to Ross Douglas about water and the pipeline at Standing Rock. Ross, you brought a mask today. Describe it and tell our listeners what it is and what it represents.
Well, in the tradition that I have been involved with and kind of grew up with, all people, as they live their lives, dance with different masks. You would have the dance or the mask of a grandfather's love for his grandson, which would be a rather happy mask. And you have different situations and different things that we all live through. And the mask that I brought in was a mask that kind of describes what the ancient ones called Wendigo psychosis. And it is a kind of gold fever. If we know those things that, say, make men climb a mountain pass in the middle of winter in Alaska, going after gold in the Klondike, that kind of gold fever. These masks that we wear kind of are representations of these kinds of emotions and sicknesses and things that we have. And this particular mask is a black mask with a red tongue and silver dollars drilled with eye holes where the eyes are. And it represents that money a lot of times interferes with our vision forward. And if you dance with this mask, you'll see that the money interferes with the vision. But the mask more or less represents a rational argument for war. His red tongue sticking out is a metaphor for blood in the mouth. And that would be when we go to war, where there's a lot of times blood spilled. So that was the representation of this particular mask, and it is of the Wendigo variety. And the other mask that I brought was of the Hatui variety. And that's more the emotions that one would have of a grandfather to a grandson. These masks, the Hutui, comes from the dawn of time. There was an ancient sorcerer who roamed the earth and could do magic. And one day he came and met the Great Spirit. And the Great Spirit asked him to do magic and show him his power. So he tried his best, and he was able to only shake the mountain a little bit. And the Great Spirit said, "Turn your head, and I will move the mountain." And so Hutui could not resist but look at what the Great Spirit was doing, and he turned his head, and he was hit by rock. And from then on, from the beginning of time till now, he wears the mark of the crooked nose, knowing that he was hit by the falling rock. So that's the other mask that I brought.
What kind of feeling did you have as you drove away from your visit to Standing Rock?
Oh, definitely. None of us wanted to go. We all wanted to stay and participate, because it's hard to describe, but it is a kind of a leaderless group who is connected together by an emotion. Very interesting and difficult thing to describe to people. But as people go in, they kind of seek peace. And they kind of...
They seek peace, or do they experience peace?
Both. You're led to it. Do you know what I mean? There's people... I saw a conflict. I saw a conflict resolution in the camp. But for some reason, there is a pull, almost a psychic pull, towards that we must resolve this peacefully.
And is this the kind of thing you've experienced other places as well, or was this unique?
This was unique of this place, but I know that this kind of thing exists in other places. I'm sure it existed with Gandhi's people, or I'm sure it existed in other confrontations that have been violence against peace.
But this sense of peace you were leaving, is that the first time you've experienced that directly?
No, it was just different. You know, every experience is a little different.
Where else do you experience it? Do you experience
here,
it in
here?
Here
in the valley. This is the Valley of Peace.
In nature?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And when we had the gathering in 2009 with the majestic Mount Sopris, that was an invocation of this feeling, of this reconnection of nature and man.
So that was a very interesting gathering, because part of the dynamic that was going on there was forgiving Columbus.
Yes.
And also the dynamic of the doctrine of discovery. And those two viewpoints kind of played out in the sense that there was some resistance. We need an apology from these Christians.
Oh, this is a difficult subject. Yes, there was a forgiveness that happened at that time, and it was a forgiveness of the man, okay? And with most of the things, the people are already forgiven, and they don't really know it, okay? So that experience was to forgive the man, but what's important now is to see what we're doing now that is bringing that ancient 600-year-old hurt forward into this time. And is that what you're asking about with Standing Rock?
I'm particularly interested in what I hear you suggesting you could talk about, and that is, how do we get past that?
Well, it's going to be kind of a long process that's probably not going to fully come to fruition in my lifetime, but I can see it happening as more and more people know. There are many people in the valley that kind of know about this process that is moving forward, but I was heartened to see that on November 3rd, that over 540 religious leaders from around the world, and one particular in Carbondale, Shauna Foster, the Unitarian minister, went up and participated, went to the front lines of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and they denounced the doctrine of discovery and then burned copies of the document. Now, this is something that's been going on for a long time, trying to undo this hurt that we're talking about with Columbus. In 1977, several Indians, Oren Lyons of the Onondaga tribe, went to Geneva, and we started to work on a document called the Rights of Indigenous People. And it went through the UN, and that's one part of what you're talking about. But it's going to be a long process. But I think what the Indians are doing is they're inviting Christians to be Christians, to come forward to look at this material thoughtfully and resolve it. It doesn't have to happen now, and it doesn't even have to happen in the next generation, but it is something that we will have to resolve if humanity is going to survive. And I think humanity will survive.
Well, certainly the Lakota people have put a focus on our relationship with water that I think is a service to all humanity, to all life on the planet.
Yes, that's the idea. I think what they're trying to do is share a vision quest with humanity. They're trying to reestablish that relationship with man and nature. It's not man against nature in a competitive way, but it's man with nature in a cooperative way.
Yeah, we're either in partnership with life or we're in a contest with it, and Mother Nature has the last card.
I one time had a conversation with the pastor down in Aspen, Nicholas Vesti, and we were talking about consciousness, and he was describing an Indian rain dance, saying that the Indians wished for rain, and I said, no, Nicholas, what they're doing is they're participating with nature and the rain. It's a completely different dynamic. That's what's happening here.
Well, I think that's the difference between a contest and a partnership.
Yes. It's something I think that one has to emotionally feel. That's why they would go out alone on the vision quest, because it's an emotional and spiritual feeling that that kind of is generally processed alone. And that is, I think, what a lot of the tribes would do to combat what we were talking about with the mask, the Wendigo psychosis. It would combat that. Once the individual had a profound contact with nature, then they would look at the world in a different way, not as something to be used or thrown away or wasted. It's something to be met with in a moral, spiritual way.
Well, and that resonance confers an identity that makes the need to compete irrelevant.
Well, it lessens it. I think the competitive nature of man will always be there, and to some extent it's good. But sometimes it gets over the top, kind of like down in Texas many years ago, this mother paid somebody to beat up a cheerleader. This competitive thing gets out of hand, you know, and we've got to rationally kind of think how we're going to do things. I'm hoping that the people of Carbondale will continue to help the natives and the struggle that they're going through with the water up in Standing Rock. I ask that people actually think about going up there and seeing for themselves what is up there. And I actually think that even if the whole area is cleared out, that it will become a symbol in the future. People will come there and come to pray to the water even after Standing Rock is gone.
May the water run free and pure and clear for all the children's children.
Oh, thank you, Will. I hope the same.
Thank you, Ross. This is William Evans. I've been speaking with Ross Douglas about the water and Standing Rock. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.